Welcome, everyone, to the 2015 William Hill Preakness Stakes Seminar. My name is Robert Kowalski, and I'm the Racing Operations Manager for William Hill. I'm joined today again by my special guest, Richard Eng. Rich has been with the Daily Racing Form for over 8 years. He's also a columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, going back to 1998. Also joining us today is David Tooley, founded ViewFromVegas.com, ESPN, and ESPN Chalk, the section devoted to covering sports betting. Rich, Dave, welcome again.
Oh, thanks for having us.
And I'm looking forward to this because I think we did a good job a couple weeks ago. Let's see if we can do it again.
Did we do a good job ever? You know, Rich, I kind of found something here on the Review Journal's website dated April 30th at 2:08 p.m. exactly. And you wrote a little article there and said at the very bottom, Eng's picks for the Kentucky Derby. And I'll go ahead and just say this right now. You wrote Dortmund, Frosted, American Pharaoh, International Star, and Firing Line. Now, I'll go ahead and give you a little mulligan there on International Star, being that you had to select someone before the scratch. But, I mean, Rich, you handed out the superfecta there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some people might complain that I didn't hit it perfectly, but a dollar box cost $24, and you would have caught the super for $634. And I did get some nice emails and some nice compliments that I was finally right for once, fellas. But, you know, the thing about the betting on horse racing is you want to make more money than you started out the day with, and hopefully some of my followers did.
Yeah, no doubt, exactly. That superfecta for a dollar came back $634, the trifecta $202, and the exacta $72 for $2. Dave, tell me about your take.
Yeah, my top pick in the Derby was a Firing Line, and I feel like I found the overlay. Ran a pretty good race, came up a length short, but I was happy with how he ran. I do think, you know, not to make excuses, because I mean it's horse racing and it is what it is. But I mean, the Derby wasn't run quite the way I was hoping it would be. I thought there'd be a lot hotter pace up front. I think that, you know, the two scratches that, you know, made it so Materiality and Carpe Diem didn't have to gun for the lead quite as much as I expected them to. I think that made the pace a little slower. And then that also benefited American Pharaoh not being, you know, hung out even wider and able to get up there, up near the front and sit just off the pace. You know, I was hoping, you know, because, I mean, you know, I certainly feared him. And I was hoping that he would have to be used a little bit more to get up in that good a position early. So that kind of let him stick around at the end and persevere. So, again, you know, that's why I got the better odds on Firing Line and took my shot. But, you know, just one of those things where is if it just would have played out a little differently, I think, you know, I could have pulled it out. But I hit the exact in the trifecta myself. I lost money overall in the race, so I was certainly not going to claim that I won. But it was definitely worth the shot, and yeah, just close but no cigar.
You know, of course, and full disclosure, I hand out a horse that actually never even ran in North America. I called out Mupta Heesh. Yeah, sure, the bottom horses hit the trifecta, but you know, I really thought that this race was going to be run quite differently as well. These are the things that you just have to take a look at as the race develops. You see scratches that do, in fact, affect the pace of the race, and that's something that we always concentrate on. How will the pace affect the final result of this race? And so that's exactly what happened. You know, and of course, so in this next hour, you know, Rich, Dave, and I are going to be breaking down the 8-horse field and then offer our thoughts on the winner of the race. We'll also cover some other top selections, perhaps some betting angles on some of the matchups or propositions that William Hill is going to be offering. You know, so with that said, you know, let's go ahead and begin. The 2015 Preakness, you know, it looks to be dominated by the trio of American Pharaoh, Firing Line, and Dortmund, who were, of course, the first three finishers in the Kentucky Derby. They held those top positions all the way around the racetrack, which is quite an unusual occurrence in the Run for the Roses, a race in which usually only one horse can stay forwardly placed from start to finish. You know, as the Triple Crown now moves to Pimlico, there's so many reasons that we should expect a repeat performance from those three. So, you know, over the years, as I look at it, the optimal running style for the Preakness has been horses on or very close to the lead. And some things that I'm taking a look at, some of the odds and ends from a wagering perspective. When you take a look at the Preakness, you definitely want to know that you're handicapping a different race than the Kentucky Derby. You definitely want to know who your Kentucky Derby starters are. The past 10 years, the Preakness winner came from the Derby, except in 2006, where, you know, of course, it's Bernardini, and that was when Barbaro, you know, went out, and that's why he couldn't win it. I guess we could put an asterisk in 2009. Rachel Alexandra didn't run in the Derby, but she did win the Oaks. Moving on, the other four closers have won the past 10 Preakness races. That's Curlin. I'll have another. So Stalkers and the front runners, in my eyes, have the most success going into the Preakness. You know, but, you know, five have ran second as closers. So horses like Right on Curlin, Animal Kingdom, Mind That Bird, Street Sense, you know, they usually come in at a really big price. So, you know, again, I'm trying to frame what some tickets could start to look at from a wagering perspective. You know, and then if you want to take a look at the winner of the Kentucky Derby, well, the winner of the Kentucky Derby hasn't finished out of the money. Basically, it's only happened three times in the past 10 years. Orb in 13, he ran fourth. Super Saver in 2010 was out of the top four. And, of course, I mentioned Barbaro did not finish in 2006. So let's look at these returning Kentucky Derby starters. American Pharoah drew the rail with a morning line set at 4-5. Rich Dave with a forecast for possible thunderstorms as of Wednesday night in Baltimore. Buy or sell American Pharoah from post one for the Preakness. Dave?
Again, I'm always looking to beat the chalk. I mean, now American Pharoah, obviously, you know, deserving winner of the Derby and legitimate Triple Crown threat. I mean, like you said, you know, the Derby winners have done very well in recent years, coming back and winning the second leg of the Triple Crown. And the race definitely does set up again for his running style as well. He's also one for one on a sloppy track, although his wet number, Tomlinson number, is lower than some of the other contenders in this race. So you know, some of the breeding, not as much for the slop. But, I mean, yeah, he's going to be forwardly placed. I mean, he did set up the pace in the Derby a little bit, again, partly because it started so far outside. But him and Dorman probably going to go right to the front, the two Baffert runners dueling up front. If you ask me buy or sell, I would say sell, because again I'm gonna I'm gonna try and beat him, but I'm definitely gonna use him in my exotics though.
Rich, what do you think?
Well, you know, there's a couple angles in play here, and I actually want to take one step back to add some more fuel to some of the things you were saying about Derby horses and the Preakness. I read a stat that of the last 18 Preaknesses, nine of them were Kentucky Derby winners, so there's a pretty good strong history of back-to-back, you know, horses winning.
That's nice, that goes pretty deep, so you could see just how much running in the Derby means in Preakness results. Very good.
Yeah, and also, you know, there's a logical reason for that, is because since the connections, the owners, the trainers, the jockeys, all point for winning the Kentucky Derby, typically the best three-year-olds at this time of the year will be in the Derby, and then the handful, it's usually about a third of the field that moves on to Pimlico, are the better three-year-olds. So the newcomers are, that's some degree at a talent differential. You mentioned a couple that came outside the box, and there was good reasons for that. But the ones who run in the Derby are usually the stronger members of the group. As far as going back to American Pharoah, you know, the race at Oaklawn and the Rebel was in the slop. There is a asterisk next to it. For my point of view, is the fact that the horses that American Pharoah faced in Oaklawn were kind of weak, but he had a chance to dance around on a sloppy track and still win nonetheless. And you know, I after he won the Kentucky Derby, fellas, you know, I was reading a lot of the post race comments, not from the horsemen themselves, but from a lot of media members. People who had, you know, proclaimed this to be a super horse and the next Seattle Slough and this and that. And I found it almost amazing that there were quite a number of people that were down on this horse after the Kentucky Derby win for you know, real basic reasons. One was the time was kind of slow, and the last quarter mile was really pedestrian slow. And, you know, there was thought that this horse would just demolish this field instead of a grinding workmanlike one-lane victory. And I kind of saw the bandwagon emptying some instead of more people jumping on. And, you know, I actually took a reverse view because, one, I didn't think he was a, at this point, it's way premature to call him a super horse. And, in fact, the generation, a lot of people said this was the best three-year-old generation they've seen in some time. I reserve judgment. In fact, I said on the show a couple of weeks ago that I like to hold my judgment until the three-year-olds face older horses in the second half of the year, and I still stand by that. But in my mind, American Pharoah did some very good things in the Kentucky Derby. His track, his rating was the fact that he ran much further than every horse in the race except for one, I believe. I think it was Frosted. It was the only horse who ran a further distance on trackist than American Pharoah. So, well, there are real positives in my mind that come out of this Kentucky Derby win for him.
You know, and you make a great point, Rich. I'm taking a look at the fractional times and the splits as well, and there's no doubt it really slowed down from a 24 to just a cut under 24 to a 25 and then to a 26.5. So definitely you could see it starting to wear. But with all that being said, American Pharoah still did exactly what they planned to do with him, and that's go to the front, hold on. And like you mentioned, even with the amount of track he had to cover, he still managed to go ahead and win the Kentucky Derby. So for me, more kudos to him. And yeah, I agree. You know, with and listeners are going to have to just check the weather report come Saturday morning for the track conditions, because if it is stormy and rainy, there's just a few horses in this 8-horse field that have run ever on a sloppy or a wet track, and Pharoah was one of them. And like you said, Rich, you know, he didn't run against much, but he ran. And that's what I think is the most important point here. Getting the experience of live racing on a wet track. And so that's what I'm always looking for as well. All right, great takes. Third place finisher, Dortmund, is in post number 2 with a morning line set at 7-2. You know, let's I'm going to go ahead and save a couple comments for the end. But Dave, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, Dortmund, we saw in the Derby what we expected to see, going right for the lead, leading them all the way around, and then they just didn't have enough to hold off a firing line, and of course, American Pharoah. I think definitely upgrades in the on a wet track as well, but could easily see him stealing this on the front end. A lot of people are talking about, you know, Baffert having both these horses and whether there's a conflict of interest. But obviously, you know, he's been in the game long enough that, I mean, he knows that, you know, he has to serve all his owners and send the horses out there the best they can and then, you know, let them settle it on the track, you know, let the best horse win. So, you know, Baffert has won. You know, the 3 times he's had a Derby winner, also won the Preakness before falling short in of the Triple Crown. But Dorman, you know, obviously, you know, very live. And, you know, going back to what we were saying about the, you know, the Derby winner, you know, doing so well in the Preakness, you know, a lot of times, you know, the second place finisher or third place finisher skips the Preakness and waits for the Belmont to come back later. You know, here we have the top three horses, you know, not being scared off, and you know, 4 of the top 5 finishers from the Derby in the race. So, I mean, I think we, you know, very possible. I think any of these could turn the tables on American Pharoah.
Richie.
Well, admittedly, 2 weeks ago, Dortmund was my top choice to win the Kentucky Derby. And when I was watching the race in Mohegan Sun a couple weeks ago, I was paying close attention to the fractions because Dortmund took the lead. And when they went the half mile and 47 and change, I thought I had one heck of a shot of winning the race with Dortmund. And then when they came to the top of the stretch, there were the 3 horses across the track, American Pharoah, Dortmund, and Firing Line. and it was just a tremendous dogfight from the top of the stretch to the wire. And American Pharoah showed the kind of grit and determination that we had not seen in any of his other races, because he had won so easily, but he had to dig down and really fight it out. And Dortmann, who looked like a tired horse in the middle of the stretch, he actually fought pretty strongly, I thought, to hang in there for third. And Firing Line, of course, there was the talk about him not changing leads in the stretch, and he ended up getting beat a length. But just an excellent stretch duel. I think the positives for all three of those horses. Now, you know, when Dortmann lost the Derby, I was under the impression that Baffert might skip the Preakness with him, maybe bring him back in the Belmont, maybe just let American Pharoah go and the highest Triple Crown hopes to him. But Baffert didn't back up at all and said right from the go that both of these horses are going to Baltimore. And I tried to think it through because, you know, Baffert had been on record saying that American Pharoah was one of the best horses he's ever trained, and he was superior to Dortmann. And then I kind of had this idea that, you know, maybe Baffert is just not afraid of Dortmann beating American Pharoah, all things, you know, being equal. And that's why maybe he's not afraid to send both of the horses over. So it'll be interesting. Dortmann's going to take a lot of money. There's going to be a lot of people who like him again. But he could actually, in my mind, and I hope I don't get ahead of myself for setting up the Preakness, but I really think he could serve almost like a rabbit again for American Pharoah and might help out his stablemate, actually.
Rich, a great point. You know, I'll go ahead and mention this. I watched, once again, after seeing what Dortmann did in the Kentucky Derby, I had to go back and watch its race previous at Santa Anita, in the Santa Anita Derby. A really great friend of mine, a pedigree handicapper, told me, watch that Santa Anita Derby and watch how Dortmann drifts out. And what do you know? I saw it, and it happened again in the Derby, the Kentucky Derby. That's I know the horse is great. I know it's built for this, but it's still not as optimal a running horse as some of these others. You know, with this, you know, a third place finish in the Derby, I could probably see a third place or less finish for Dortmund here in the Preakness. So my take here on Dortmund from post number two. Moving on, Firing Line, Kentucky Derby runner-up, drew the outside in post number eight, installed at 4-1 in the morning line with Gary Stevens on board. Dave, what do you think?
Well, again, I love Firing Line going into the Derby. I certainly like him again here. Again, as we said before, I mean, this race really, really sets up to be a repeat of the Derby with these three going around the track. Again, we'll talk later about, you know, what it'll take for some of these other horses to get into the money and, you know, cause bigger payoffs. But I mean, I think, you know, Firing Line drawing the outside, obviously only field of eight. We're not dealing with 18 to 20 horses here. So, yes, Stevens should definitely be able to pick his path, and will probably, be sitting just off the pace again. Probably even hoping that American Pharoah and Dortmund kind of run each other into the ground up early. But I think he'll definitely be a factor, and obviously, the slightly shorter distance, I think, helps him a little bit, too.
Rich, what do you think about the eight horse?
Well, if I'm Gary Stevens, when I heard and saw that the Firing Line drew the eight hole in an eight horse field, I probably was ecstatic, because I think the kind of race that Gary wants to ride is, you know, very similar to what he did in Churchill. It's just to sit off the pace, second or third, and find a nice position. And when you start from the outside like this, and there was a very long run to the first turn at Pimlico in a mile in the 3/16 race, you should have plenty of time, plenty of opportunity to grab the position that he wants, just moving over to the left as they, you know, move past the finish line for the first time. So he should be absolutely thrilled with this draw, you know, because some of the other horses will drop back. He'll be able to tuck in. He was second most of the way around behind Dortmann, then fought American Pharoah and the other horse to the wire, but in this race, I could see him even sitting third or fourth, depending on, you know, what the pace is going to be. If the pace is faster, I think Gary might want to sit back just a little bit more, but if the pace is slow, He's got the kind of horse that can go right into the battle earlier. And this is obviously a very, very live horse. And the comment, the situation where he would not switch leads in the stretch, may or may not have cost him the race in the Kentucky Derby, but if Gary Stevens gets him to switch leads in the Preakness, it might be the difference. This is a very live animal.
Rich, a great point. Why don't you, for our listeners, explain switching leads?
Well, switching leads, I'm going to go back to something I saw on TVG in the early years where Frank Lyons, former trainer and TVG analyst, was trying to explain to newcomers what switching leads would be. He compared it to if, say, you were walking through an airport and you had a piece of luggage, good, you know, heavy enough, or it kind of drags you down a little bit in one arm or the other. He said switching leads, basically, say if you start with the luggage in your right arm, and you know you're walking with your left lead, and you start to get tired a little bit. He said to switch leads would be for a human being taking that luggage and moving over it to the other side of your body, and you switch leads, and you take the weight off and take the pressure off. For a horse, it might be galloping down the lane with your left lead, and you switch over to your right lead. And the thing is, it kind of re-energizes you and takes the pressure off one part of your body and into a less stressed part of the other. So it's a very positive thing for horses. You'll see jockeys in the course of a race where they energetically push their horse left or right, trying to get them to switch leads, and that gives them a little more burst of energy for the last part of the race.
I couldn't put it better if I tried, Rich. That was great. And I'm just going to go ahead and make it 3-for-3 with Gary Stevens mentions. He's the consummate pro on the perfect horse for the Preakness. I'm a really big fan. And if I'd see 4-to-1, well, I don't think I'm going to get 9-to-2 or better. But, you know, even 4-to-1 is a great buy price on Firing Line horse number 8. All right, two more Kentucky Derby returners. Danzig Moon, he's 5th in the Derby, and he's on post number 4 with Julian Le Perru on board at 15-to-1. Dave?
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of a closer, you know, looking back through his past performances. You know, a lot of people were high on him going into the Derby. Again, finished 5th in such a huge field. It's certainly a decent accomplishment, but yeah, I didn't really see much coming down the lane. He didn't really have that closing kick like was expecting. Pretty much just maintained his position, and I mean, I just see him overall as, you know, a cut below the other ones. Now, you know, if the pace is faster, that would certainly benefit him. But I think there's some other closers that I'm going to be looking at instead of him.
Yeah, Danzig Moon definitely wilted down the stretch in the Kentucky Derby. You know, it had some very good buyer speed figures building up, you know, going back to the Tampa Bay Derby, then to the Bluegrass, and then, of course, to the Kentucky Derby. So you would think we would see a little bit more improvement as far as the form pattern goes. But that being said, I just don't think he's among the class of the top three that we've discussed. So Danzig Moon would be a pass for me. Rich, what about you?
Well, Danzig Moon, I was actually rooting for him to finish 4th because I had used him underneath in my superfecta. And it would have really boosted the price, the superfecta, if he had come in that position at 22-to-1. But from a couple of weeks ago, I had given out the top 4 horses in a different order for the top 4 finishers in the Kentucky Derby. But also I had mentioned 3 long shots that I was going to use to try to run into the number late if they could. And the 3 horses were Danzig Moon, Keen Ice, who I believe ran 7th and did not run too badly, and War Story, who never made any part of the running at all. But, you know, the pace was slow enough in the Kentucky Derby where you did not see that transition of horses from the back moving into the front. Basically, the top horses stayed there all the way around. I was hoping Danzig Moon was going to run for it, but he didn't. I agree with you know, what Dave has mentioned. He's a cut below. He's a hard-trying horse. And I think of interest is the fact that Julian Le Perru, who had a choice of mounts in this race, he also rides Divining Rod, who won the Lexington. He and his agent chose to ride Danzig Moon back, so people might take a look at that as a docking disease to partially handicap in the race for you.
All right, there we go. So we've got one more to go here with Mr. Z. Mr. Z was 13th in the Derby. He's back in at the last minute here with Corey Nakatani on at 20-1 for the morning line. Dave, what do you think about this late entry?
Yeah, if you know, people don't know, Mr. Z, formerly owned by the Zayat Stables, hence the Mr. Z, the who had the winner of the Derby in American Pharoah. And so, you know, they weren't gonna run him in the Preakness. And Dwayne Lucas convinced the owner to sell the horse to Calumet Farms, and so now Lucas has a Preakness horse again, going for his seventh Preakness. He won with Oxbow a couple years ago,
right.
And I mean, I think this one, you know, could surprise here. The you know, we didn't really get a chance to run in the Derby. You know, was checked. You know. Almost could have been knocked down in the cavalry charge heading down the front stretch. So I don't think we really got to see his best effort there. So I think definitely room for improvement here, and I think definitely we'll be sitting behind the front runners here. We'll drop back, and again we'll see if. If Lucas works his magic again.
You know, I'm looking and it's like I'm thinking of the best case scenario for Mr. Z here. I mean, look, at this point, it's got one win in 13 lifetime starts. 13 lifetime starts, by the way. Let me just go ahead and say how impressive that is in this day and age for a three-year-old in the middle of May. But again, you look at the buyer speed figures, it goes a 90 in the Southwest, the Louisiana Derby, a 64. And then a bounce back to a 90 in the Arkansas Derby, and then an 82 in the Kentucky Derby. So I'm not sure what we're going to expect out of him, but I don't think it's going to be a winner, even if the track is wet, which it has some experience on that. You know, even if you take a look and try and figure out, you know, does he do better in a smaller field? Well, we've already seen that too. You know, we've seen everything, every possible right. conceivable angle for Mr. Z. You know, I really appreciate the horse. I love the fact that they have him running pretty much every 3 weeks, but I'm not sure of what the odds are going to be for this horse to truly get my money to win. 20-1, maybe that might be a good buy price. But Rich, what do you think here about Mr. Z?
Well, you know, over the years we've seen Hall of Fame trainer Wayne Lucas win some improbable Triple Crown races. That Dave, mentioned Oxbow winning the Preakness. I remember. When I was doing some work for ABC Sports, he won the Belmont with a horse called Commendable, who was just an extremely nondescript horse before the race and even after the race. It's like, how did this horse win? But I think one of the things that lends itself toward a Lucas upset in some of those other situations was the fact that you looked at the other horses in the field. You didn't really have, in quote, superstar horses or horses that really stuck out. I really have a difficult time envisioning him beating the likes of American Pharoah, Firing Line, or Dalton, because I think these horses are just more talented and faster than him. So it would be a real shocker to me if Mr. Z actually gets it done.
Well, great take. That's all of our returners from the Kentucky Derby. Now, I split it up from the returners to our new shooters. And, you know, I decided to take a closer look at how the new shooters have performed in the Preakness. You know, if you take a look at the best of this subset each year since 2000, I see that these horses have actually a much better record than I expected. I go back 15 years. They've recorded 2 wins, 6 seconds, 2 thirds, most of them at very long odds. In 2015, it's kind of unlikely that Taylor Verve, Bodhisattva, or Divining Rod will upset the formidable returning Derby trio to win the Preakness. You know, however, 8 times, you know, a new shooter has found a way to get into the trifecta. And if it happens this year, it's certainly going to be at a very good price. So, that being said, Bodhisattva, which, by the way, I actually looked up. That means enlightened being in Buddhism. Because I do these things. I have to look these things up. So, you know, it's a horse that's got a home track advantage. He's probably going to vie for the early lead. From post number six, young Trevor McCarthy gets the mount at 20-1. Dave, what do you think?
Like you said, this is the obligatory Pimlico / Laurel horse that
right.
gets in the field, you know, wins the local stakes, and then sticks around and takes a shot. And again, we have seen some of these do okay getting the money in the past. Definitely will be up on pressing the lead. You know, don't think he's as fast as American Pharoah or Dortmund, but you never know. It's one of these cases where, you know, could gun to the lead and the other jockeys could just let him go, figuring he's not a threat. And I mean, that I think is his upset chances, just to try and steal it and just, you know, not look back and hope no one is able to come catch him. Again, very unlikely, but you're certainly going to get paid if he does do it. I give him, yeah, very much of a long shot chance. Again, if you know, if he drifts up to absolutely ridiculous odds, I'll probably play him. Yeah, if he's just 20-1, I think that would
go ahead,
be
give me,
way too short.
How about 50? If I give you 50-1,
if you give me 50-1, I would probably take a shot. maybe just for okay. You know, $5, but yeah, you never know in horse racing. But I mean that's his shot. I mean, in my mind, you know, if I'm trying to beat the favorites, I'm hoping that he, you know, goes up there and presses the pace and you know, gets in the suicide duel with them.
Right. Rich, what do you think about Bodhisattva?
Well, I'd probably take a different angle for running style. I really don't believe he's fast enough to go up there and fight for the lead unless he's just driven to the front in a suicide kamikaze mission. But, you know, there's a couple of races where this horse going two turns of the Laurel was able to sit back, well back off the leaders and make a late run, and he won two of the times. One was his maiden special, another one was an allowance condition. And if I'm the trainer, Jose Corrales, I would tell Trevor McCarthy that this is our only chance to do anything. It's not to fight for the lead against superior animals, but actually to take back, you know, let them do what they want to do and just try to run the last quarter mile and see if you can pick something up. But it would be obviously a monstrous upset if this horse gets there, but I really think his running style, his only chance to really pick up a paycheck would be to take back and not to go fight for the lead.
Great take, Rich. All right, so Tale of Verve is from the barn of Dallas Stewart, who's a trainer who knows how to have a late-running long shot ready in the Triple Crown. Tale of Verve has Joel Rosario on board at 30-1. Dave, what do you think here about Tale of Verve's chance, who, looking at his past performances, and all I see here are maiden special weights.
Right, yeah. That's all he has to his credit, although also to his credit, he's at least been improving along the way, and you know, finally got his first win with Rosario in the iron, so that's another, you know, positive tick in his favor there. But his running times, yeah, nowhere near the top contenders in this race. I mean, you'd really have to take a flyer, you know, thinking that this horse is, you know, improving and continuing to improve, and we just haven't seen his best yet, in order for you to take a shot here.
Richie, how about you?
I think the amazing fact about the five Tale of Verve is his career best buyer speed figure is 72, and that puts him easily 30 points behind quite a few of these horses. And, you know, if you look at some of these other horses, you can't even find a 72 because, you know, they're pretty good animals that have shown speed from the get-go. This is such a slow horse. I really think the Morning Linemaker did the local owner and trainers a favor by making him 30-1 because he really should be twice that price in the Morning Line even.
I think enough said about that. Well, all right, let's take a look here at number seven, Divining Rod. Divining Rod won the Lexington Stakes with that ideal close-up running style that we're looking for. Javier Castellano with a morning line, 12-1. Dave?
Yeah, this is a very, very interesting horse in my mind. I mean, obviously, you know, finding the winner's circle last time out, but you know, kind of has the same running style as Danzig Moon, but usually, you know, but runs up a little closer to the pace before changing tactics a little bit the last time out. So, I mean, I think this is one that I think will be, you know, taken back again, and you know, they'll definitely be hoping that the race falls apart up front.
You know, that's our field right there, 1-8. You know, and before we get to making our top selections here for the Preakness Stakes, I do want to point out that, of course, at every single William Hill Race and Sportsbook this coming Saturday, we're going to have not only all the wagers that you could possibly dream of at any race book that you could find at our 12 parimutuel shops, but we're also going to be offering a great number of propositions and matchups, some actually which I'd like to go ahead and present to my esteemed guests here and see what you guys think here about some of these. I've got a couple here that I'm looking at as far as matchups are concerned, and we have one right now that's up that's going to be American Pharoah and Dortmund. So right now, with American Pharoah the favorite over Dortmund, how would you Dave, how would you tackle that matchup?
Well, I kind of like Dortmund, you know, heads up here. I did bet the matchup in the Derby, and I lost that one, obviously. but I do think these two horses, there's really not much that separates them. I'm very high on Dortmund, and so I mean I think you know, heads up. I believe your current price is plus 145. I mean, I think there's value there in the heads-up matchup there with Dortmund.
Rich, and what are your take here? Well, how would you go ahead and tackle a matchup like this that we present of Pharoah against Dortmund?
Well, I would like American Pharoah in the matchup. But, you know, when you bet matchups like this, you have to look at the price. If American Pharoah is higher than the 155, say if he's minus 170 or minus 175, I probably would have to pass. But, you know, just on equal basis, I would probably prefer American Pharoah in the Preakness.
And to our listeners, you know, again, when we're looking at a matchup of two horses, all we're really being concerned about is just the performance of just those two horses. Forget about anyone else. So if they happen to run 7 and 8, well, you know, that's really all that matters is who ran 7th and who ran 8th here. Hey, here's another one. How about Firing Line and American Pharoah? Rich, how would you go ahead and take a look at that, knowing if, let's say Pharoah, you'd have to go ahead and lay 2-1. Would that be a good buy price for you?
Well, you know, I'd be tempted to take Firing Line. I really would. I really think he has a heck of a chance to win the Preakness. Just off the races in the Kentucky Derby and him drawing the 8 post, and getting plus money, I'd be very tempted to take Charlie Firing Line.
How about you, Dave?
I feel the same way. Yeah, heading down the stretch there in the Derby, you would have definitely wanted to have plus money in a matchup that, you know, felt could have gone either way. I mean, obviously the favorite did prevail, but again, you know, over time in those positions. Would definitely like to have had that ticket.
I know we're kind of framing our Preakness Stakes selections here by discussing these matchups here, but let's go ahead with one last one here that William Hill's offering here, and it's a Firing Line against Dortmund. Right now we have a Firing Line, a short favorite. Dave, how about this one here?
Again, like you said, we're kind of tipping our hands here, but I think the price is about right with Firing Line, you know, favored slightly, which, you know, might surprise some people because, you know, Dortmund being 7-2 and Firing Line being 4-1. But like you said, these matchups are a different animal. You know, a lot of times, you know, you might have a stone cold speed horse that, you know, you think has a chance to win the race, but I mean, it's also more likely to fade and finish last than you know than to finish in the middle of the pack. And if you're betting a matchup, a lot of times those you know real hit or miss horses you don't want to be playing in matchups. So I think Firing Line is probably the right number there.
Rich, how would you tackle Firing Line and Dortmund in a matchup with a Firing Line as short favorite?
Well, ironically, these two horses have run against each other three times already in their brief careers. And Dortmund holds an advantage of 2-1 over Firing Line, but you know, Firing Line finished in front of him in the Kentucky Derby and just narrowly missed winning the Derby itself. And the two races that Dortmund finished in front of Firing Line were Derby Preps and the Los Alamitos Futurity and the Robert B. Lewis, and those were real dogfights. Either one of those races could have gone the other way in a head mob. So I would probably favor a Firing Line in this setup.
Great takes both. Well, so some of the other propositions that we're offering at William Hill's Race and Sportsbooks is, of course, will American Pharoah win the 2015 Triple Crown? So that's a yes, no. And obviously, if you think he doesn't win the Preakness, well, they kind of answers your question as to whether he's going to win the Triple Crown, because he's going to have to go on and win the Belmont, and that's all three levels there to pick up all the pieces. Some of the other things are yes-nos on just winning the Preakness. So if you have a decision that you like to make on either American Pharoah, Dortmund, or Firing Line, our top trio here in the Preakness Stakes, you could bet yes or no on the win for the Preakness Stakes there for all three of those horses, available now at all William Hill Race and Sportsbooks. So, you know, here we are. We're taking a look at these eight horses that have entered. Again, this is the Preakness Stakes coming up. It's going to be Saturday, 3:18 or so p.m., race number 13 at Pimlico. And, you know, I think we'll go ahead and start taking a look at this, Dave. Why don't you go ahead and start to frame what your top selections are going to be here for the Preakness Stakes come Saturday?
Well, again, as I've hinted, I think all along, you know, Firing Line was my pick in the Derby, and I'm going to go with him again. I think you know that experience, it should be able to improve off of that. And again, I think the pace will help him. Again, he won't have to be too far off. So I don't think it matters. You know, I think the hotter the pace, the better. If some of these other horses go with American Pharoah and Dortmund and push them, I would be happy to see that. Again, you know, Richard and I had the disagreement on what the six is going to do, whether he's going to be part of that pace battle or if he's going to hang back. I mean, I definitely hope I'm right on that end. But I think Firing Line is on a par with American Pharoah. But you know, I'm not going to throw him out. I'm not going to go nuts spreading in all the exotics in this race. I mean, you know, you really got to connect the dots to have a huge parimutuel payoff here in most Preaknesses, and I think this kind of fits that mode too. So, I mean, I think you really have to, zero in on the horses you really like and nail it, as opposed to just kind of connecting the dots and taking a stab. But the horse I really like to get in there to cause those bigger payoffs is number three, Mr. Z. Like I said before, I really don't think we got to see his best effort in the Derby. I think he can definitely throw out that race. And Dwayne Lucas, I mean, I know some people say, well, it's just his ego that had him push for this horse to get sold and so he could have a Preakness runner. But he does tend to show up with live animals on the big racing days over the years. So again, if this horse was 10-1 or 12-1, I would probably not be as high on him. But I do think we are going to get a fair price. And again, either on the win end or exploding the tote board.
So then, Dave, does your opinion change at all based on the track conditions, whether it's fast or whether it's wet? Would your selections change you know, for the listening audience?
Yeah, years ago, when I first started this game, I think I was like everyone else, you know, used to have the mud marks, you know, the asterisks in the daily racing form that show you, you know, whose mother was a mutter and whose father was a mutter and all those lines. But there was too many times where I would handicap a race and then the skies would open at Arlington Park in Chicago, you know, where I cut my gambling teeth, and so I'd run to the racing form to see who had the wet track pedigrees, and I would change my picks, and then you know, sure enough, my original horse would romp home, and I wouldn't have a penny on it, I really realized that you know. The times I did best in handicapping is, you know, on horses, you know, current form and who's peaking at the right time, and you know, in the end, overall, you know, the best horses usually can run on most surfaces, so you usually trust that if my horse is peaking at the right time, that hopefully they'll come with their best effort regardless of what the track is. I mean, obviously there are some horses that don't take well to certain surfaces, but I just learned long ago that you trust my initial handicapping and let the chips fall where they may.
Dave, that's a good take, and I think I can learn an awful lot from what you just said there. But I'll get into my selections in just a bit. Rich, please pour your knowledge.
Well, just to make a comment about the potential off track and support of Dave, I think there's sometimes a tendency to overthink that situation. Over the years, one thing I've learned is that, you know, good horses usually can run whether the track is fast, good, maybe a little bit sloppy, certainly if it's sealed. A good horse is a good horse. They tend to hold their form and be able to run. And these are grade one animals, so even if there's some moisture in the track, it probably wouldn't affect what I do or what I think or how I structure my ticket. You know, going into this race, the fact that the two Baffert horses drew 1 and 2, I think will be one of the most interesting parts of the race right from the very get-go. Throughout the years of Bob Baffert having so many talented horses, not only in the Triple Crown but in other divisions, you notice that when Baffert horses, and he has multiple horses in the field of a major stakes, they do not duel with each other. I don't know whether he specifically tells them or it's just an unwritten handshake. Usually one goes and one sits. And if they run similar to how they did in the Kentucky Derby, that means that Dortmund would be the horse that would go and American Pharoah would be the one that would sit. Now, if that scenario occurs in front of Gary Stevens from the eight post, the firing line, what I would think Gary would want to do is possibly trap American Pharoah down on the rail and make him eat some dirt. That's something that American Pharoah has never done in his life, is take some dirt in his face. Because in the Kentucky Derby, one thing that Victor Espinoza did was he was willing to sacrifice ground to stay in the clear, and he never had any dirt kicked in his face because he was always 3, 4, even 5 wide. So he ran further, but he had a clear trip all the way around. He could have a much different trip in the Preakness, especially if Dortmund goes and Gary Stevens or maybe somebody else with enough speed to go, maybe Corey Nakatani and Mr. Z tries to box him in. So I'll be interested to see how that affects American Pharoah.
So that's a great take. So now, with all that being said, to you, really doesn't matter whether it's a fast track or a wet track. You're pretty much, looks like to me, you're zeroing in on firing line here. Is that correct, Rich?
Well, actually, believe it or not, I'm actually going to make my pick on American Pharoah. And I've just been extremely candid in pointing out some of the potential negatives that could get this horse beat. But, you know, some of the things I said earlier in the show were people that who were big fans of American Pharoah, calling him the next great superstar, Triple Crown, the candidate, Seattle Slew, and, you know, Wannabe and all this stuff. A lot of those people jumped off the bandwagon, and I think a lot of times people get they change their opinions a little too quickly, but I thought there were real positives on American Pharoah's win of the Kentucky Derby. He is going to be tested in a different way in the Preakness. Like I say, he may get dirt kicked in his face for the first time. But if he's the kind of horse that Bob Baffert has said that he is, then, you know, he's not afraid to run Dortmund against American Pharoah and get him beat. And I think this actually could make for an interesting journey for American Pharoah if he can just sit third down on the rail, pocket trip, and then when they come to the top of the stretch, I could almost see, not that they're working in tandem, but I could almost see Martin Garcia letting the rail open up for his stablemate, uncoupled stablemate, and come through. So if I would envision an American Pharoah victory, it would be sitting third on the wood, coming to the top of the stretch, having the inside open up like the seas parting, and this horse actually winning the second leg of the Triple Crown.
You know, and that's great because I love the fact that, you know, for our listeners, you kind of framed out the race, and that's really, it comes with time. You just learn how to see how a race develops, and that kind of frames your tickets out, and that's a really great take there, Rich. And I guess you kind of answered, you know, if you are one of those few American Pharoah fans, as you're seeing everyone jump off, you know, how to make money on this race if you're a Pharoah fan. So you definitely want to keep your eyes on, you know, what you want to go ahead and do with maybe an exacta or a trifecta. And I know, Dave, you mentioned if you really have a one opinion, you know, just go ahead and stick with it and fire into that. And, you know, that's always, you know, a great thing because, you know, there's many a toss tickets on the floor if you have the winner, but you happen to, you know, key it in an exacta or a trifecta with, you know, horses that don't run in second or third. Personally, you know, I'm going to go ahead and be the stubborn mule here among the three of us. And if I see a fast track, it's going to be American Pharoah by a neck over Firing Line. But if I see a wet condition, and I mean really wet condition, I'm going to change it up. I think Pharoah will still win, but I'm going to put Mr. Z and Danzig Moon behind them. I'm just really concerned about, I'd like to see it. I'd like to see how these horses would take to it, but my money would go elsewhere on horses that would already have more of a foot on a wet track. So, again, this coming Saturday out here, First Post, 7:30 a.m. On Saturday, the largest guaranteed pool comes in the late pick four on that day. That wager, which will include the Preakness Stakes, is guaranteed to handle $1.5 million. So that's $1.5 million guaranteed in that pool in the late pick four at Pimlico that day. Well, Rich, Dave, thank you so much for joining me today. Richie, where can listeners find your insights online through social media?
Well, they can always find me in the Las Vegas Review-Journal. I write Friday column, which I'll write tomorrow, and it'll be in the Friday paper. I handicap the Southern California racetracks. But if they want to follow me on Twitter, and I try to remain active on Twitter when I can, my handle is at RichEng4, the number 4, ProPick. And
Rich, and spell that out again so that they know exactly what to look for.
Yeah, it's at the at sign, RichEng, number 4, ProPick, ProPick.
Great. And Dave, where can listeners find you online again?
Most of my articles are at ESPN.com, the chalk page where we cover all things sports betting, in addition to horse racing, doing a lot of preseason NFL week one picks, over-unders, all that stuff, NBA playoffs, Major League Baseball. And then, of course, also my viewfromvegas.com website and on Twitter, at viewfromvegas.
Well, that's great. You know, so again, ladies and gentlemen, you could find a William Hill racebook near you at williamhill.us/racing. This weekend, where, you know, of course, we're going to have all the horse racing matchups for the Preakness, like we discussed, all the other propositions for you all to wager on, including the 2015 Eclipse Award for Horse of the Year. As I mentioned, will American Pharoah win the Triple Crown? So, you know, it's all one big collection. It's a whole lot of fun. I really appreciate, once again, Dave, Rich, you coming on board and joining us here for the Preakness Stakes Breakdown. There you have it, our take on this Saturday's Preakness Stakes. Thank you all for joining us today, and may you all, your photo finishes go your way at William Hill. the home of betting.
You want sports 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We have a menu of options. Lotus Broadcasting is your official sports network, feeding your fix with ESPN Radio 1100 and 100.9 FM, Sports Radio 1340, and NBC Sports 920 The Game, your trifecta of sports.